From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, October 17th through Friday, October 21st, 2022. It was a week of social turmoil and economic worries as inflation continued to rise and the prime minister of one of the West's two leading democracies came tumbling down. Can the same thing happen in the U.S.? Leaders and governments across the Western world are concerned, to say the least. Not that things are all that rosy in Russia, China, and Iran. It was a week of political mudslinging, renewed COVID worry, big-time media bias, Trump noise, and that pesky little war between Russia and Ukraine that threatens to blow up the world. Get ready for a powerful hour of Black Belt Talk Radio during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, we've got righties, and we've got fence-sitters. Please don't get angry. Just listen closely, and while doing so, maintain a degree of educated skepticism, regardless of whether or not you agree. Here at the Michael Harrison Wrap, we're equal opportunity offenders united against the idiots who threaten to destroy our country. We'll be joined by Kevin Casey at Talkers with a countdown of the 10 biggest topics of the week. Victoria Jones in the nation's capital on the fall of Liz Truss and controversy over the crown. The TV version, that is. Jack Heath in New Hampshire on undependable political debaters. Dom Giordano in Philadelphia on CBS TV's hit piece against conservative talk radio. Jerry Reynolds in Dallas on the future of the electric car. And Matthew B. Harrison in Springfield, Mass. On Biden's student loan forgiveness program. Influential yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do a daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world where we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations across the U.S. and the U.K. The past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. This installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is brought to you in part by the rock group Gun Hill Road and their provocative music video titled Idiots. Check it out at idiotsvideo.com. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, the executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, please give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about topics on talk shows across America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, a tie between abortion and LGBTQ rights. The Georgia senatorial election involving Herschel Walker's history with allegedly paying for a woman's abortion is keeping the subject on the front burner, while many GOP candidates across the country are finding the recent overturning of Roe v. Wade to be a liability in their election campaigns.
On the LGBTQ front, congressional Republicans introduced what some are calling a national version of Florida's Parental Rights and Education Bill, or what critics have dubbed the Don't Say Gay Bill.
At number 9, media and talk radio. There are always stories about the media, journalism, freedom of speech, and bias in the news and in the national conversation.
This week's buzz in the media centered around on-air backlash against a special report on divisions in America by the widely watched CBS Sunday Morning Show last weekend, attacking conservative talk radio.
At number 8, big tech tied with Kanye West's plan to buy Parler. Also, in the realm of media, complaints of abuse by big tech are almost always among the top issues in the national conversation.
This week's conversation focused on Kanye West, now known officially as Ye, and his intention to buy the conservative platform Parler.
At number 7, crime. It's obviously going to take more than a week and a lot of work to take the rise in urban crime off the Talkers' top 10 list of political and social issues.
Meantime, the political parties are debating across the nation as to the actual statistics on crime versus the anecdotal perception of crime.
At number 6, British politics. The rapid fall of British Prime Minister Elizabeth Truss this week shocked the world and served as a glaring example of the disturbing instability that has beset the politics of the Western world's two major democracies.
But that by no means indicates that things in Russia and China are all wine and roses, or is it peaches and cream? Anyway, you get my drift.
At number five, COVID-19 and other health-related issues. It seems the so-called post-pandemic era hasn't fully taken us out of the woods yet.
A swarm of new COVID-19 variants appears to be gaining traction globally, raising fears of a winter surge. A major doctor at Texas Children's Hospital says he thinks of them collectively as the Scrabble variants because they use letters that get high scores in the board game like Q, X, and B.
At number four, Trump's legal problems. The litany of legal woes bedeviling the former president are still in play. Mar-a-Lago, January 6, election tampering, corporate fraud, defamation, and more.
It's all becoming background noise in an increasingly loud and contentious news and media environment. Trump, Trump, Trump.
At number three, the Russia-Ukraine war tied with foreign affairs. The devastating and frighteningly dangerous war grinds on and continues to escalate, raising fear of nuclear engagement. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says this week that Russian forces planted mines at a major hydroelectric dam in Kherson, the destruction of which he warned would cause a catastrophe on a grand scale.
Meanwhile, the unrest in Iran continues to build as its repressive regime has reportedly responded to protests by increasing its use of torture to punish dissidents. In China, the Xi government is wrestling with COVID problems and increasing economic challenges. And who the hell knows what Kim Jong-un is up to?
At number two, the economy. The Biden student loan forgiveness program is off and running, surviving a last-minute appeal to the Supreme Court by a Wisconsin voter group to stop it in its tracks.
Meantime, the rise in gas prices and oppressive inflation are causing major headaches for the Biden administration, and according to the polls, lowering the Democrats' chances of holding on to congressional power in the midterms.
And at number one this week, politics and the midterm elections. With the elections coming in less than a month, key races in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Florida, and Arizona, among others, are stirring up news and buzz in the national conversation.
Although you hear complaints about every election, going back to the beginning of time, being dirtier and more negative in its campaigning than any in history, this election seems to be dirtier and more negative in its campaigning than any in history. I shudder to think about what we can expect in 2024. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. The United States of America is not the only major world democracy where politics is wild, woolly, fast-paced, and cutthroat. Let's check out what's happening with our cousins on the other side of the pond. Joining us now is our international woman in the nation's capital, the executive director of the D.C. radio company, Victoria Jones.
I don't know why anybody would think that American politics is the wooliest and wildest if they've ever watched Prime Minister's Questions or ever heard members of Parliament in Parliament burst into raucous laughter or make pig noises or anything like that.
I remember watching that show on C-SPAN back when Maggie Thatcher was doing it. And frankly, it was as wild as mixed martial arts or
really?
Professional
wrestling.
Really?
The only thing more wild sometimes is the South Korean Parliament.
Oh, really? Is that
yeah,
one of those?
Yeah, they have fights.
Where they actually... Yeah, I remember over the years, occasionally you see on YouTube where you see in the news some country in the Far East where all of a sudden the tables are flying over and they're having brawls. And that's Congress, you know? I guess politics, and we'll get back to Liz and the Brits in a second. But I just guess politics has always been, even in the most civilized countries, a dirty, cutthroat business. What can I say?
It's dirty. It's dirty.
Yeah.
It's very, very dirty. I mean, in the old days, they would you know, throw down a gauntlet or something. Well, if you threw down a gauntlet, it was a reason. It meant they were calling you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They were calling you out for something like a duel.
Well, in American politics, we have had duels to the death.
We have over there.
They make Broadway musicals out of them today. It's
yes.
Crazy, crazy,
crazy,
crazy,
crazy. Yeah, well, we had this guy try to blow up Parliament.
Well, That's a whole other story. And of course, there have been so many assassinations and attempts at assassination in America and around the world. But what happened to Liz Truss? Was she over her head? Did she make promises she couldn't fulfill? Did she do things that don't work? Was she set up by Boris Johnson? I ask these rhetorically. I don't know if you know the answers to these, but these are the things that one wonders.
Some of it will be written by history, which is, you know, a long time in the making. But no, I don't think she was set up by Boris Johnson, but he's actually come back from a vacation, which is very unlike him because he seems to spend his entire life on vacation, as far as I can see. So because he wants to, he's one of the, what they call in British politics and in the British media, the runners and riders. That's what they call for a leadership race, any kind of political race, a runner and rider, because it's like a horse race. Uh-huh. So he intends to run, by the way. What did she do wrong? Just about everything, including not listening.
In other words, she didn't listen to her advisors, she didn't listen to the opposition, and she didn't listen to the people.
She didn't listen to anybody. Mm-hmm. She just kept repeating things. She also made a huge mistake. Her whole premise was this mini budget and was all about finances and how she was going to fix everything. Well, she didn't listen to the bankers.
Well, that's a mistake.
Big mistake. And they told herself, they also told her Treasury Secretary, which has a different name over there, the previous one, the one who was sacked, Kwasi Kwarteng, a couple of weeks ago, this isn't going to work. And by the way, you need to listen. This isn't going to work. You can't do this. This is not going to work. And well, we're going to do it.
Yeah, well, you're not an economist, but I have to say, several weeks ago, when she was first named, right during that turbulent week when the Queen had died and she was named and all that was going on, you immediately said on this radio show that her policies don't seem to be sound in terms of whatever this mini budget was about. And it turned out that I guess you're correct.
Yeah. And one of the other problems with her policies was that what she campaigned on and what was very frustrating, it was frustrating for the press who were trying to cover her, but it was also frustrating for people who were trying to decide whether to vote for her or for anybody really over there in the country, was that she and this is always a clue, as your astute listeners know, with any politician, was that she consistently refused to get specific about numbers.
Yeah, yeah, they call it fuzzy math.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be very interesting to watch. And we only have a couple of seconds talking about watching things of British origin. I understand that Netflix is under severe pressure from everybody, including King Charles III to Dame Judith Dench, that they have really maybe gone. They're being accused of having gone too far in fictionalizing the more modern era of the monarchy than ever before. And some people are saying that they should put a disclaimer on it, that they should be ashamed of themselves for insinuating certain things about the royal family, particularly Charles and his mother, that is actually unconscionable. What are your thoughts as a native of Great Britain?
Netflix knows very well that for many Americans, The Crown appears to be almost a documentary. The Crown appears to be true because the early seasons were so well done. And so seamlessly you move into the later seasons. So why wouldn't the later seasons also be true? People wouldn't necessarily question whether it was true, except that it isn't true. It's made up. And as various people who are still alive and can testify can say, it's malicious. It's horrible. And it's taking sides and it's ruining people's reputations and lives. And I don't know why they're doing it except for ratings. I think it's very cruel. And deliberately cruel, and I don't think they're necessarily going to back down. They seem to have an axe into the royals, and I have to wonder, almost, as I say this, whether they have taken a side, and you wonder about whether that has anything to do with them having done the Harry and Meghan documentary, whether they've taken positions.
That's our Washington correspondent and the executive director of the DC radio company, Victoria Jones. Coming up next, a visit to our friends in the Granite State, as well as the city of brotherly love. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Do you sometimes get the feeling that our society is being overrun by idiots? Do all the stupid, dumb things people say and do make you crazy, 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 crazy? If so, the new song and video by Gun Hill Road is for you.
Idiots walk among us.
They're lazy, lazy, lazy.
Idiots talk among us.
Their speech is often hazy.
Idiots talk among us.
Never ceases to amaze me.
Idiots talk among us.
Tries me crazy, crazy, crazy.
Crazy, 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 crazy.
It's called Idiots. Check out the video. It's free. Idiotsvideo.com. That's idiotsvideo.com. That's idiotsvideo.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. As talk radio listeners know, I'm a regular guest on a number of shows discussing the issues and the media itself. During this next segment, we'll be playing two interesting clips from this past week's visits. Let's start with Jack Heath's Good Morning New Hampshire show, heard statewide on our affiliate network, The Pulse of NH. This week, we both sounded off on our mutual distrust of politicians as the midterms rapidly approach.
Talking a little bit about what's going on here. It's interesting. We here, I've pushed back hard on this Democrat strategy or this, like, you know, don't do debates. Don't face a Republican opponent in a debate a few weeks to go. Focus on a couple of issues, be negative and all that. That's up to the politicians and the campaigns. But we've gone forward here with debates, regardless of the Democrats showing up or not. But nationally, is there something going on? Did you see that New York Times Santa College poll earlier in the week?
Yeah, there's I don't have all the specifics to cite you, you know, statistics or anything like that. So I don't want to mislead anybody. But there's a tremendous amount of this type of ducking and covering and avoiding saying anything, not showing up, disorganization within the world of political campaigns, more so than I remember seeing over the years that I've been following these things. And I think it has to do with a complete lack of respect that the political parties, and both parties are capable of this, the lack of respect they have for the intelligence of the American voter. And when you see the way people are and the way it's depicted in the media, outside of the news talk or really news junkie universe, I can understand why they think that.
Yeah, I'm looking at that Georgia story that's not on national news about the, you know, they changed the, you know, they dove into the election laws. Joe Biden went there, pulled out the race card. They were going to take away rights. More people have voted already, early voting in Georgia. It's working. But again, hypocrisy. I just think independent voters aren't as stupid as sometimes people in Washington think they are.
Independent voters. In other words, you think, well, the fact that voters say they're independent, and that's not to besmirch, you know, partisans or people that are, you know, devout Republicans or Democrats. But there's something intelligent and sovereign about an American citizen saying, I'm an independent voter. I wish everybody were independent voters and just people who are directly related to party politics, mm-hmm. you know, being politicians or having a direct connection to the benefits of being a partisan. That's all it should be, because, you know, when the average citizen says, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, and they vote, you know, party line, and they actually treat it as if it's their football team.
Right.
They're selling themselves short.
Well, look at the treatment of Tulsi Gabbard. I mean, she was in our studios the beginning of the week here, and she just left the Democrat Party nationally. She was a Democrat presidential candidate in 2020. And she said, when I asked her, why did you leave the Democrat Party? Why are you an independent now? And she said, it's not the same party when Jack Kennedy, when I joined it, Martin Luther King. It's been her terms, Michael, hijacked by a small number of fanatical ideologues who want to take away our freedoms and tell us how to think, bring in a lot of stuff in our schools. And basically, you know, woke ideologues, she said, have hijacked the party. So now she's left the Democratic Party. She was vilified. Like, all the comments when I had her on the show the other day, national newsmaker, just to hear from her. She's also, by the way, still in the U.S. Army Reserves, a veteran, former congresswoman from Hawaii, presidential candidate, were nasty, venomous comments. Oh, she was never a Democrat. She's this. She's a traitor. She's a jerk. She's a all these mean stuff on social media.
I guess she was, what would we call it, a dino, a Democrat in name only. Look, the same thing happens on both sides. The same argument is made on both sides, that the Democrats have been taken over by radicals and they want to take away our freedom, and the Republicans have been taken over by radicals and they want to take our freedom. Mm-hmm. Both sides say the same thing about the other side. And you know, if you're an independent-minded person and you get your news from a variety of sources, it becomes evident that they're hurling the same mud at each other, and that obviously, maybe it's true. The radicals on both sides are causing all of this trouble, and that's what gets media attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have entire platforms based upon targeting people who buy into that kind of partisanship. So it's a vicious cycle that just keeps amplifying itself. I mean, we call it an echo chamber, and it's a good term. I personally, in my work, both as a media person and as a private citizen, I try to stay away from all that because it just seems so obvious to me. You know my philosophy about idiots. Well, they're all among us.
Well, what concerns me is just how there's a dichotomy, right? I mean, the people in New York and Washington that play this game all the time thrive on it, right? I mean, that's how I look at Washington. Power and money drive success in Washington. And the media plays along with this to a point. But the average person doesn't have time for this, Michael. Michael Harrison Radio Rap airs Saturday at 2 on the Pulse of a Nation. They don't have time. They're running a business. They're running a household. They're tired of the negativity. They're tired of the divisiveness. And they live their life, and they kind of just turn it all off. They tune it out, and that concerns me because then they don't get the news as much. Then the news becomes political. And we've been in this, by the way, and everyone wants to blame Donald Trump for it. He may have taken advantage of a populist campaign and divisiveness, but it was started long before that.
And, it's been going on forever.
Yeah, and people look at Congress. They're down on this and that. And I don't know what makes – I don't know where the inspiration comes back. I mean, none of these candidates – incumbents are running the ads. Hey, I'm proud of what I've done. I'm proud of what I voted for. This is why I ran. This is why I want you to reelect me. Everything is tear down the, you know, divisiveness. Everything. And it just gets to be fatiguing and almost unhealthy, if you follow me.
Well, politics is fatiguing and unhealthy, and this is a situation that, you know, it has to do with our wiring as human beings. Even the good guys in history, in American politics and internationally, if you scratch the surface and you look behind the doors and you listen to how they do their campaigns, even they're dirty. Mm-hmm. Even our heroes are dirty. Politics is a dirty business.
Yep, yep.
It is about power and money, and what's sad are Americans, everyday American working people who actually lend their heart and their support to some of these campaigns, believing that they speak for them, they're the fools because they're not getting the power and they're not getting the money. They're giving power and money to people who lie to them.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many people vote against their own interests by buying into what they hear or what they, you know, feel is, sounds good, and really don't know what it means. But this is always been the case. And that's why it's very important that the media remain as independent as possible, so that people out there who do think for themselves find a place and find sources to engage in what's happening and not become apathetic and not stay home and say, I'm not going to vote because my vote doesn't count for any number of reasons. If your vote doesn't count or you feel your vote doesn't count, then you've already given up and democracy cannot work.
Okay. Fani, what else is coming up on the show? You're getting ready. It's I know it's Saturday, but Thursday, you're pretty much set. Anything else we're missing?
Well, the politics in the midterms are big. The economy, inflation, gas prices, huge. We're still obsessed with, and rightfully so, what's going on in Russia and Ukraine and China and Iran. Hey, COVID-19 has been making a comeback, and people are nervous about that. The aforementioned British politics is big. Trump and his ongoing legal problems, abortion, LGBTQ rights, big tech, Kanye West, Parler, talk radio is in the news. CBS did a big hit piece this past weekend. I was involved with that. We're going to talk about that. Oh, there's plenty to talk about.
What was the CBS piece?
CBS Sunday Morning did a piece about division in America, and they painted talk radio as being one of the problems. They interviewed me for 2.5 hours and used about 20 seconds of what I said out of context, which is the way it usually is.
Now you know what Ron DeSantis felt like after the 60 Minutes interview.
That's radio talk show host Jack Heath interviewing me this week on his show Good Morning New Hampshire on our affiliate network, The Pulse of NH. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Now, let's move down the coast to Philadelphia, where I appeared on the Dom Giordano Show this week, the big midday program on WPHT Philadelphia.
Hey, Michael, welcome in. At least you made the cut yesterday.
And you're not going to edit me, are you?
No. Dan is working on it. Dan, take out a
live edit. Twist his words as far as possible.
At least I made the cut. You talk as if like that's some type of an honor to be on that. They interviewed me for 2.5 hours to be able to finally find about 40 seconds worth of commentary that I gave them out of context that at least fit their narrative.
Yes.
For example, they said to me at the very end, Jim Axelrod, who's a nice fellow, he was on a mission. He says to me, so tell me, Mr. Harrison, what is the mission of talk radio? Is it to spread light? And I looked at him and I said, the mission of talk radio is to generate ratings and revenue. Now, that was me saying, let's get off our sanctimonious high horse. Now, what I said to him after that, they cut out. What I said after that was, and isn't that also the mission of this show and CBS?
Exactly.
It's like, who the hell are you? And it really comes down to Ted Koppel. He was the executive producer of the piece, and his view of the media and his view of politics set the tone. Who the hell is Ted Koppel to be the arbiter of what's true and what's not true in terms of the diverse and even divided American marketplace of ideas? That I take offense at. The reason they didn't use you, Dom, is because you didn't serve up the image of the hateful, screaming, divisive, nasty, lying conservative talk show host.
Well, guilty as charged, yeah.
Too rational, Dom. You're way too rational.
I thought they were pretty good, Michael, too, in that Axelrod. Look, my radar is up. 86 minutes, you had more than that. In that they liked some of this nuance, this type of thing, but they kept on saying, oh, come on now. You can't get away with that with these people that listen to talk radio. You have to throw a hate fastball all 3 hours every day.
Right. And I'm sure the reason that our friend Joe Madison, who is an African-American liberal and probably the highest profile, most successful person of the African-American liberal genre, a very highly respected, wonderful guy, the reason they didn't use him is because he probably wouldn't go along with the premise that talk radio hates African Americans and hates liberals, and he, even though he could have easily jumped on that bandwagon, he wouldn't. So people seek victory at the expense of truth. I went into it extremely hesitant, but I'm a tough cookie to crack. But so what they got out of me wasn't anything where I said anything bad about talk radio or the conservative part of the radio spectrum, but it fit with their narrative, and I guess they were embarrassed not to put me in the show.
Yeah, I got
you.
So here's a big question, too, though, that people all the time, and I think you and I are in the same camp. Even after this experience, I think you got to engage with these people, with the media. Now, there are times when it's such an obvious thing, you're not going to get any fair shake. You know, we would sense that. But this is a lot of people, Michael, when I told him we would be on this, even out here at the station, this is something that is prestige. And when Jane Pauley's on, it might be versus what Ted Koppel and his minions did. I still think it's a good idea, when reasonable, to engage in this stuff, even though, you know, you can be taken out of context.
It's a reasonable idea. I do it all the time. I don't even label myself as a conservative.
Right.
I'm an ally to conservatives and to reasonable liberals. I don't like the radicals on each side that make it bad for everybody. And I've been doing this for decades. I'm obviously still in business, and I'm obviously well-respected. So I must be doing something right. But when they just go after the entire conservative end of the radio dial, and I keep saying the radio dial, then I'm going to defend the conservatives. And the fact of the matter is, I tried to make the point to them that the liberals in America have public radio, and public radio is as much radio as commercial radio. It's radio. It shares the same appliance, the same platforms, the same techniques. It just has a different brand, and that it serves the moderates and the liberals very effectively, and it's more than one company. It's more than NPR. There are many public radio brands and networks out there. NPR is like Kleenex. Everybody says NPR, but it is, right. There's more than that. And they say, well, that's apples and oranges. I said, what do you mean it's apples and oranges? This was off of what they
right.
used.
Right. And Michael, question I got, you probably did too, given your position. Well, why isn't there liberal talk radio and all that? And
I'm going to get to that first, but I got to get this point across real fast. That they said, well, Ted Koppel says that NPR tells the truth and talk radio doesn't.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the question about how come liberal didn't work with Air America, I said that's not because liberalism wouldn't work if it was done well. Air America wasn't very good. And I also went so far as to say, and Al Franken, who was the basic point man for Air America, was, with all due respect, a lousy talk show host.
That's my appearance this past week with Dom Giordano on WPHT in Philadelphia. Coming up next, a visit with Jerry Reynolds in Dallas. He's one of the nation's leading experts on the automobile industry. You'll find it very informative to hear what he has to say about the electric car boom. You're plugged in to the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. Since its invention in the early 20th century, the automobile's impact on society has been immeasurable, and it continues to be to this very day. The horseless carriage has shaped our culture and influenced us economically, environmentally, and even psychologically. On my podcast this week, I talked to one of the leading experts on automobiles in the media. He does a show called Car Pro, and it's heard in Dallas on WBAP and across the nation on the Car Pro Radio Network. His name is Jerry Reynolds. What's going on with electric cars? Are they here to stay? Are they introducing them too quickly? Are they trying to push it through too fast? What's your view of the electric car element in terms of the auto industry and our culture?
They are pushing it way too fast, and they are spending way too much money investing. A couple of car companies, you know, were very resistant, Honda being one of them, that really didn't really want to get into the electric car business yet. To be competitive, you know, they made an announcement Friday that they were going to spend $3.5 billion building a plant in Ohio to make electric cars along with Sony. And I have reviewed, 15, 16 electric cars, and I like them. They perform great. But I liken them, Michael, to cell phones in the 80s. Your very first cell phone was bulky and big and heavy, and the battery life wasn't that great. And look at what we've got today. And I think electric cars are in the infancy of electrics, and everybody wants to be like Elon Musk and Tesla. And the truth is, Tesla's cars are not very good. They don't have the service to back them up. They have a lot of quality issues, and yet people still like them. And you know, the performance of an electric car is great, but I've also been stranded on the side of the road because of battery range and had to be towed. So range anxiety is a real thing with people who have electrics. Until they get up into the range of 500 miles or so, people are going to think hard before they get one. And then they're more expensive than a gasoline car. And then you've got to buy a charger for your home. And if you don't have a home, then what do you do? I mean, there's a lot of issues. These cars are coming at us way too fast. They're being pushed way too hard. And I'm in favor of electric cars, but until they improve, and I said it on the air last Saturday, the real answer is hybrids. Great gas mileage. You can go on vacation without planning your trip around charging stations, you know? And we don't have the infrastructure. I mean, the power grid in California is horrible. The power grid here in Texas is horrible. You know, if everybody plugs their car in, we're going to have blackouts and all kinds of things. So I think it's too early for the amount of money that's being spent to develop these. The government is pushing this electric cars heavily. And, you know, when, for instance, in California, and I'm on the air in L.A. every weekend, and they love their electric cars out there. But, you know, the U.S. government gives them $7,500 in a tax credit. The state gives them another $2,500 if they buy an electric car. You can't use their HOV lanes if you don't have an electric or a hybrid. I mean, I just don't understand how it's the government's place to incentivize electric cars.
Well, it's based upon the premise that it's helpful to the environment, but I would imagine, and again, I'm not a scientist, but I'd imagine that the increased use of electricity in order to meet the demands of so many electric cars would increase demand that would hurt the environment as well.
Agreed. And let me tell you something. The batteries in these cars are huge, and they're very heavy. And at some point, as electric cars age, those batteries have got to be dealt with. And what are we going to do with them?
Right.
Where are we going to bury them?
Yeah. You know? All of these things have downsides to them that are not often expressed because, as you mentioned, it comes down to politics. And when the government gets involved in pushing something like this that really should be in the private sector under the guise of it being environmental protection, there might be some truth to it, but there also might be some politics to it as well. What's your assessment of the whole connection between chips, supply chain, and the economy in terms of the big picture of the American economy?
Well, it all started really with COVID. You know, COVID was something that, as a country, we hadn't dealt with in most of our lifetimes. And the automakers, all of them, made a very tragic mistake by planning production cuts. And so they canceled their contracts for those microchips. Now, the average car today has got 4,000 microchips in it. Wow. Some of them have as many as 10,000 microchips in them. They run everything. And so they canceled their orders. Well, COVID caused people to work from home and buy more computers and more cell phones and more gaming equipment. And those people who make those products had been sort of on the back burner of the supply chain to get microchips. Well, suddenly they were in business, you know. And when COVID, when COVID came and it was clear a couple of months into it that, you know, hey, people are still going to get out. They're still going to buy things. The car companies couldn't replace those chips. So COVID led to where we are today. Now, there's a lot of new chip makers coming on board, but it takes a long time to build a manufacturing facility that builds chips, and it's expensive. And most of the chips cost about 50 cents a piece, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. So, but the inside of a chip factory has to be more sterile than a hospital operating room. There cannot be a speck of dust anywhere, or those chips will get ruined. And that's why it's so expensive to build the plant. And then you're putting billions into a plant to sell your product for 50 cents a piece. It really didn't make a lot of sense, but it's changing. We've got some chip plants coming on board. Cars are becoming more plentiful just in the last 45 days. Some dealers, you know, that had just completely empty lots have now got inventory and sitting on the ground. But this chip thing has transformed the auto industry in a way like I've never seen. You'll never go back to the days like when I was in the business and I had 3,000 cars out there. People have learned that ordering a new car, it's not a bad thing. And you get exactly what you want. You're not paying for things that you don't want. You're not having a dealership stuff a car down your throat because that's what they've got in inventory. It's changed a lot of things. Mobile service is becoming a big thing where dealerships actually come to your home or office and do the work, and with certified technicians. So the microchip shortage has changed much about the auto industry. And you know, it'll get back to normal. But, you know, the thing that happened, Michael, was when cars got real short in supply, the automakers quit spending money on incentives. I mean, there was a time not too long ago, several years ago, that, you know, there was a $10,000 factory rebate on certain vehicles.
Correct.
And today there's virtually nothing. There's no incentives out there at all. I mean, a $500 rebate today is a big rebate. But this will all come back around, I promise you. The dealers will ever stock the number of cars that they used to. And I think people have learned that ordering is probably a good thing.
Last question is, are we seeing the beginning of the end of the traditional dealership? Will people buy cars online and have them delivered to your house, and you sell it to somebody online, and they come and pick it up in a truck. I see commercials for that. Is that where we're going?
Not in our lifetimes, I will tell you that.
That's the host of CarPro, a weekly show heard on WBAP in Dallas and on the CarPro Radio Network, Jerry Reynolds. If you want to hear the entire interview, please click on mhinterview.com. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. We have time for one more. Supreme Court Justice Barrett rejected a challenge to President Biden's student debt relief program from a taxpayers association in Wisconsin, then said he had overstepped his authority in adopting the sweeping measure, one that could cost the government hundreds of billions of dollars. So it appears the program will go forward as planned. Joining us now is our show's producer, law professor, and the associate publisher of Talkers, Matthew B. Harrison. I imagine that there's all kinds of legal complications as to how the Supreme Court justice got involved in this whole thing with Wisconsin. What's the deal?
This case started when a Wisconsin organization made up of about 100 taxpaying individuals and business owners, they came together and sued, saying that the U.S. Department of Education is acting outside of its administrative authority, you know, by forgiving all of these loans as ordered by the Biden administration. The judge in the district court said that these people don't have standing because they were not personally injured by this. And they appealed. And during the appeal process, they emergency appealed, because it's happening right now, the forgiveness, to the Supreme Court. And since Amy Coney Barrett is the justice overlooking the Seventh Circuit, she is the one who got the emergency application. And presumably the other justices agreed with her decision.
Do the students that are in your law classes, are they impacted by this? And if so, what is their attitude?
Anyone who is in college, or even more so in a graduate program, meaning that they already went to an undergraduate college program and now are doing further education, anyone who's doing that, that isn't on a full scholarship, is probably taking out loans, or is maybe lucky enough to be paying cash. Loan forgiveness and or these new programs for repayment that allow public servants and or people who've been paying regularly for a long time to get some relief, it's affecting everybody.
I know people say, you know, this is an entire generation that's under pressure. Are you picking up any attitude from the students that you encounter? Is it being discussed?
Yes, but between classes in the hallways, there is talk. It's a lot of relief, because after graduation, there's a lot of pressure, obviously, to get a job, but also get a job that pays enough to cover all of the bills, including the repayment of the student loans.
And some of the students that are under the gun of this can be stuck paying for decades. Isn't that the case?
Correct. There is, in theory, prior to this, a program that would allow for forgiveness after 20 years. But a lot of people messed up and basically opted out or did something that excluded them from that program. And now it's being reset by the Biden administration. So they are able to take advantage of a repayment schedule that's based on actual income.
Thank you, Matthew B. Harrison. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, October 17th through Friday, October 21st, 2022. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And don't forget my song, Idiots, with Gun Hill Road at idiotsvideo.com. Crazy, 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 crazy. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications, presented in association with Talk Media Network and Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved.